LifeLock, how can I help?
The IRS said I filed my return,
but I haven't.
1 in 4 tax-paying Americans has paid the price of identity fraud.
What do I do?
My refund, though.
I'm freaking out.
Don't worry, I can fix this.
LifeLock fixes identity theft guaranteed and gets your money back with up to $3 million in coverage.
I'm so relieved.
No problem. I'll be with you every step of the way.
1 in 4 was a fraud-paying American. Not anymore. Save up to 40% your first year. Visit LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
Welcome you in to another episode of Inside Boxing Live presented by PPV.com. It is Dan Canobio. It is your boy Chris Algieri, the former 140-pound champion of the world. Oh my goodness, Chris, what a weekend of boxing. I was in Las Vegas covering the Sebastian Fundora coming out party, beating Tim Zhu in a bloody massacre. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Rolly going down to Pitbull. We'll talk about Oscar Valdez on Friday night. We'll talk about literally everything, because that's what we do every single week. How are you, Chris?
I'm good. We had a lot of boxing, so you know I'm in a good mood. It's been a fantastic weekend. Tons of fights. So, let's get into them.
Your boy is feeling a little tired. Vegas does a number on me now, man. That three-hour time difference, the lack of fresh air inside of the MGM Grand.
Yeah.
I am beat up this morning on Sunday, but I'm still ready to talk. Vegas really is
Vegas doing a number sucks the life me. Out of you. Sucks the life out of you. I know Tim Zhu's nickname is a soul taker, but I think Vegas is a soul taker as well.
And we're going to be heading back there quite often. We'll be back May 4th for Canelo Munguia. We'll be back June 15th, supposedly, for this Tank Davis card. Many more Vegas trips coming up for your boys over here at Inside Boxing Live, but we love it. Let's get right into it. Let's not waste any time. Saturday night, Las Vegas. Good gracious. What a bloody, bloody massacre of a fight. Sebastian Fundora outpoints Tim Zhu. And a lot of the discussion is going to be about this cut that Tim Zhu suffered over his head. Nasty, nasty cut. Blood everywhere after two rounds. Keep in mind, after two rounds, Zhu was outlanding Fundora 26-7 in the power department. He was picking him apart, and I was like, oh, wow, this is going to be a short night. This is going to be an even quicker fight than I thought. Zhu's going to knock out Fundora. They're going to bring Spence into the ring. He's going to fight Spence next, or maybe even Crawford, and we're going to go on with this script. No. That's not how boxing rolls, Chris. The blood became a huge point of this fight. Zhu couldn't get the blood out of his eye. He started slowing down. You got to give him credit because he made it to the 12th round and got it to the point where one judge gave him the fight. Ultimately, two other judges ruled it in Sebastian Fundora's favor. Got to give credit to Fundora. Actually jabbed. Actually boxed smart with a broken nose, mind you. Everyone's talking about the cut. Let's break it all down. Let's talk about the fight first. Let's talk about the cut. Let's talk about Zhu's corner not stopping the fight. Let's talk about it all, Chris.
Yeah, I mean, everyone is going to make the point of this fight to be the cut, but we got to look at these warriors. These guys fought really, really well, both of them. You mentioned Fundora, whose nose was broken very early on. Zhu looked awesome in the beginning. He had a game plan. He was executing. He knew how to fight a taller man. He knew how to solve the Fundora puzzle. And then that cut happens, and the entire thing changed. Everything got turned on his head. I don't know if any of you guys ever had blood in your eyes while someone's throwing punches at you, but I have. It's really terrible. It sucks. Your eyes burn. Blood is very viscous. And the way that it was pouring into his face and onto his eyes and onto his face, I mean, he was like a windshield wiper. Every chance he got, he was using his gloves to move blood out of the way from his eyes. I remember when I was fighting, I used to literally time guys blinking to try and hit them. I can't imagine dealing, you know, with trying to be able to move blood from my eyes while fighting that as often as Tim Zhu was. The fact that he made the distance is crazy because, I mean, Fundora kept peppering him, kept putting his gloves out there. I think he landed a lot more punches because Tim Zhu was hindered in terms of his sight. I feel bad for Team Zhu, man. I think in any other arena, any other fight, that would have got stopped. And we would have went to a technical decision. And I think Zhu had a really good chance, especially early on, to win that fight. Listen, it happened at the end of the second round. That doctor went in there, immediately looked at that thing, and he goes, yeah. I'll give it one more round. Yeah, well, it went nine more rounds after that. It went to the decision. So I think the narrative here was, listen, this is the first PBC on Prime. We got a lot of eyes on here. We can't have a no contest in the main event. So let's push it through. And push it through they did. I mean, they to the hindrance of what I think to Tim Zhu. I think that cut had a huge effect on the way that he fought. Like you said, Dan, in the beginning, he looked phenomenal. He had the puzzle figured out. And then the cut happens. And then the fight starts. Because it wasn't a fight before that. Tim was in total control. He breaks Fundora's nose almost immediately. He's totally countering everything that he's doing. Has a great in-and-out game. His defense was excellent. And then now he's dealing with blood and becomes a fight. And it was a war of attrition. I got to tip my hat to both guys. Fundora did what we've always expected him to do, having all those advantages that he has. But he executed, and he stuck in there, and he took the punches really well. He showed a great durability because Zhu was throwing very explosive, hard shots all night long, even to the very end. And Fundora took it really well, which I think is surprising to a lot of people, myself included, because Brian Mendoza was able to completely clean his clock. I will say this, though, and I said this in the chat, we have for PPV.com. Guys, by the way, we do these chats. They're live. They're awesome.
It was awesome.
Like we're constantly talking to the fans. Fundora looked big. Like, yeah, I know he's 6'5". He's always big. But he filled in really well this fight. I don't know what kind of nutrition change that they made, or strength and conditioning-wise, but he looked much bigger. Am I alone on that, Dan?
No, he did. He looked
bigger. He looked stronger. He didn't look as frail as usual.
Well, he said he eats a lot. I talked to him in Vegas. He said he eats over 5,000 calories a day. But, yeah, just to go back on some of the points that you made, a lot of this is going to be talking about the cut, and I don't understand a lot of things from Zhu's side of the table. Why didn't they push for a no contest? Why didn't they push for go to the cards after four?
Yep.
Because he would have won that. Just to go down even further, how do you not have a rematch clause in the contract? They had a verbal rematch agreement, which is practically nothing in boxing.
Nothing. If it's not on paper, it doesn't count in boxing, guys.
Right. So they have a verbal rematch agreement, which is absolutely nothing. We're talking about Tim Zhu, who was the world champion in this fight, who's taking on a guy in Fundora who's coming off of a loss on short notice.
In less than two weeks.
We're talking about we're in a sport where there's rematch clauses for Zilhai Zhang versus Joseph Parker for fights that don't even have titles, that don't even have the stakes that this fight had when you add in Terrence Crawford or potentially fighting Errol Spence. For Tim Zhu, everything was lining up perfectly. This was his coming out party. This was his first fight in Las Vegas, first fight on Amazon Prime and PPV.com, first big-time fight for him. Kudos to him for taking on Sebastian Fundora on 10 days' notice.
Didn't blink about it, which I thought was really cool.
Right, but after a while, like, okay, when are you going to start to be a little smart about your decisions here and understand that the situation that you're in and the precipice that you're on in terms of money? I like Tim Zhu's team. I got to hang out with them in Vegas this weekend. They seem like a bunch of great guys, but I think they made a few mistakes here in not securing a rematch clause, because I don't want to get into this just yet.
Not pushing for the fight to get stopped.
Not pushing for the fight to get stopped and not having a rematch, some type of insurance, some type of protection, so you can get right back in there with Fundora and get your titles back, because I really think he would have won the fight, and then go ahead and fight Spence or Crawford or get that big fight that PBC wants and that you want. But just to go back to the fight. Go ahead, Chris.
Wait, real quick, though, and to the point of what you're making, neither one of them mentioned a rematch.
None.
Like Fundora's like, looking straight at him. I mean, he's fighting Spence next. There's no question.
Like, why would you? Like,
but even Zhu. This is the first time Zhu. I really like the way Zhu comes across. I think he's very genuine. I think he's handled all his interviews and any kind of public speaking really, really well until this fight. I did not like the way that he took the end of this fight. He was gracious in the feet. I would have been screaming from the rafters. I got job. This is ridiculous. I need a rematch. He didn't even mention a rematch. He goes, he wanted to fight Crawford. He mentioned Crawford.
He went right to Crawford and Spence.
Spence, Crawford. Now we're money grabbing, dude. Get your title back.
This is the way boxing is set up now, man. Like Errol Spence comes into the ring, talking about a guy that hasn't fought in close to a year, who's never fought at 154, has no rank at 154.
It became news that he was coming to the fight 3 days ago.
Right.
Like, that was a big article. Like, there was articles about Spence coming to the fight.
Right, because they needed to drum up some excitement into this fight. But my point
is,
like,
it seems like a Hollywood script to me. It's very contrived.
Yes, it is. That's what It is. That's what boxing is now. That's what PBC is. I'm a business.
Into WWE.
PBC is a business just like the other promotions. They have to set up their next fight. They have to set up their next event. They have to maintain their standing in boxing. They have to maintain their standing with Amazon on Prime. So, all right, let's bring in Errol Spence, who's a known commodity. And who cares if he's not ranked at 154? Who cares if he's never fought there? He's going to jump in and fight Tim Zhu because he is with PBC. Errol Spence is the number one contender or whatever at with the WBO 154, but also not with PBC. Why would the PBC leapfrog Crawford over Spence to fight Tim Zhu next or Fundora? This is just how the sport is. It's a business before it's a sport. So that's when he comes into the ring afterward. That's why Fundora wasn't asking for a rematch. That's why Zhu wasn't talking about a rematch. He's talking about Spence. He's talking about Crawford. He's probably concussed. Who knows what he was thinking in that moment. But that's just the way
I know what he was thinking. Dollar signs, bro. He's thinking dollar signs.
Yeah, well, as he should. I mean, you're a prize fighter. You've risked your life in there.
In that situation, I am thinking, I want my goddamn belt back, and I want another belt. I want both those belts. You get two belts. I only had one. So, like, literally, in the status of legacy, Sebastian Fundora has done more than Tim Zhu. He's got two belts right now. Tim never had two belts. I am screaming from the rafters. I need a rematch. I need with you. I need it immediately. Right. I need my belt back. And that's what the fans.
That's what the fans want. The predominant, all the answers that I got on social media, put out a poll on Twitter, over 1,000 votes, what should be next? And everyone wants to see the rematch. Fundora versus Zhu needs to be next, and it's not going to be next. It's not going to be next.
And for you guys at home, yes, I agree with you, but listen, that cut is going to take a long time.
That cut, number one, that cut.
We're looking at 3 months till they can get hit again.
Yeah, we're looking at the cut is going to play a big role in what's next, and it might be a moot point to talk about a rematch. If you're Fundora and you're Samson Lukowicz, you're going to go to the big fish, and the big fish is Errol Spence. This is what you do. Yes. He literally – Samson Lukowicz said it afterwards, and you might not agree with it, but you have to respect his sentiment. I have to go out and get the biggest payday for my fighter and for my promotion. This is how the sport works. This is how boxing works. So, therefore, Errol Spence, you are up next. It doesn't make any sense at all. Spence should fight Boachuk or someone at 154, get a win. Fundora should be fighting Crawford for the WBO title. That's not going to happen because Crawford's not aligned with PBC, and PBC is not going to do him any favors here. 154, all of a sudden, is a mess. It's got big names in it, but it's got intriguing names and intriguing matchups, but it's going to take a while for this all to fizzle out and get the matchups that we want. But it's clear the fans want to see a rematch between Zhu and Fundora. I don't think that's going to happen because of money. I don't think it's going to happen because of Zhu's head. Next up, fans would want to see Fundora versus Crawford because Crawford is the next guy for WBO at 154. I don't know where Spence falls into this. He comes into the ring. We haven't seen him in years. He's looking huge in there. I think that's going to be next for the PBC sometime in the summer or the fall. It just is what it is, man. And it's not a bad matchup. It's a fun fight, but it doesn't go in the order of where we want it to happen. But when does boxing ever give us the right order?
Yeah, I agree that I think Spence is going to be next. I also think that Spence is going to beat Fundora. I think his physical strength and ability to one of the things that Zhu didn't do well in this fight was let his hands go on the inside. If you watch the fight again, he closes the distance great. He worked on doing that. He was able to do that quite often. But there were so many opportunities for him to just hit, to just bang away at the torso of Fundora, and he just didn't do it. You know who does that really well? Errol Spence. I think Errol Spence is gonna chop that tree down. As long as he's healthy, as long as he's not completely shot from the damage that he took from the car accidents and from the Crawford beating, I think Spence beats Fundora all day long. So that is gonna be the next fight, and then the landscape's gonna change again because then now the big fish has two belts at 154, and then you know Fundora is gonna be trying to get a rematch, and this, and then Zhu finally will be back, and then who knows with Crawford? Crawford goes, oh, I'm gonna go beat up Spence again and at 54 and get his two titles. So it's crazy. These turn of events, Dan. This is why we do two shows a week. This is because this is why it's Easter Sunday and we're sitting here. And I'm in a back closet doing a podcast because boxing is crazy, man. It's the wild wild west out here.
That's so funny because last night I was like, "Go, Chris. We're not gonna do a post fight, and we'll just talk on Monday." And then I woke up and I'm looking at Twitter and everyone's like talking about these current scenarios and like I got the itch and I got to start talking about it. But yeah, like I don't know what's gonna happen next. Like, Crawford is the mandatory for Sebastian Fundora now with the WBO. If Fundora goes and fights Spence, he's going to have to vacate the WBO. In that case, Crawford would fight Josh Kelly, who's next up in the WBO rankings for a belt So that's the type of – this is what we're talking about when the promotions get involved and they start having Spence leapfrog guys to make big events, then everything else crumbles after and the logical fights fall by the wayside. And I don't know. I think that Spence and Crawford are now at 154, and now there's these other parts, Zoo, Fundora, some of the other names at 154, Lubin, Virgil Ortiz – and now it's a fun division, but we're just going to have to let it all play out and figure it all out. But one last thing with Zhu, I just can't believe he didn't have a rematch clause. Verbal rematch means nothing. I can't believe they didn't stop the fight. You're right, Chris. He's a throwback fighter, like he says. I'm all business. I'm all that. But after a while, like you can be a diva. Like there are times where you could speak up, and there are times where you should take control of the situation that you're in. Because he went from being the guy on the precipice of fighting Crawford or Spence to
Back to Australia. He's going to be forgotten. He's going to be forgotten. But listen, it's not about being a diva. It's about being a king. You are the champion. You're the king. You can make the rules to a degree. And you're in the driver's seat. It's not about being a diva.
That's what I meant. Right. Yeah, diva's probably not the right word. But like speak up and just like you don't have to be that humble. No, yeah.
Be the boss.
He's got to be pissed today. He's got to be really, really pissed today with how this all shook out for him, because man,
I was pissed last night. I'm not gonna lie.
I was getting your text. You sounded like a real fighter. Like you were in his shoes. Like oh my god. Yeah. Like I was just about to get 10 million plus to fight either Spencer Crawford, two belts. I could maybe beat Spence.
Dude, you don't understand. Losing your belt is that takes a piece of us away. Literally, it's a piece of your core, that what you are. Losing a belt it's terrible.
Right, but like. When you lost your belt, you made a career high payday. That kind of soften the blow a little bit.
I was burned on the WBO, and I was burned on governing body because I was stripped unfairly, and they told me that I wasn't going to be stripped. Listen, one of their rules is if you're a champion in one weight class, you can go up and immediately fight for a title in the other weight class. This is what Terrence Crawford's doing. As soon as I did that, they stripped me, which they wouldn't do that for other guys. They allow a ton of other fighters to fight in other weight classes. So it really burned me on that whole situation. But yeah, I mean, it sucked. I mean, I still consider myself a champion, obviously. I never lost my 140. Listen, I never lost a fight at 140. I'm undefeated at 140 pounds. So not only did I not ever lose my belt in the ring, I literally never lost at that weight class. So, but losing your belt, regardless of how you lose it, it's a terrible thing. And even in fighting for a belt and losing that fight, you know, I only had two title fights in my entire career. I had Ruslan Pronikov and Manny Pacquiao. And I obviously won the first one and lost the second one. But even just contending for a championship and losing is terrible, because it's right there, man. It's right there, and you fall short.
And now Zhu is going to, he's going to have that cut. Heal up. He's going to have to be on the sideline. And not only that, he's going to be on the sideline without his belts. He's going to be back into the back of the queue at 154. It's just a rough go for him.
Like we mentioned, all these guys that are in this weight class now, and like how interesting 154 is. He's going to need. I don't think we're probably not going to see him for probably 6 months, because he's got 3 months to just let that thing heal, and then he can start training. And God knows how much extra damage was done because he fought 9 more rounds with literally his forehead's flapping open. That could be there could be muscle damage in there. Listen, you have more than just skin and skull there, so you could have some nerve damage in there that can change the way your face moves. There's a lot of things that can happen when you got a cut that bad. Healing process can be much longer than we're even thinking about. In which case, he's out of the queue, man. All these big names, he's going back to Australia. He's got to heal, and boxing moves on. 154 moves on. All these names are back. Zhu wasn't a name. Zhu was a namesake. This was his coming out party to become an American name. He's not anymore. Mm-hmm. He lost.
The hard, honest truth of it. That's the hard, honest truth of the sport. It's the one part of the sport that I hate, is when you get a situation like you had last night. But a lot of it was they could point a lot of fingers, and I'm sure Team Zhu today and this week will be doing that. 154 is interesting. You would think the logical fight then would be Crawford versus Fundora next, but they're not going to. Crawford is a, he wants like $15 million, I heard, for the next fight. And he's not going to get that. And that's where Spence hops in. And I don't hate Spence Fundora. It just doesn't illustrate what's.
I don't hate it either, but it's not fair.
Boxing isn't fair. So that's the deal at 154. That was the
boxing
main
is
event.
Not. It's not rational and it's not fair.
Right, and you just have to deal with it and present which what whatever they give you next. We have to figure out and make sense of it all. Let's get into the co-main event. Good gracious, this could have been the main event. This was the fans were excited for. I was all week long in Vegas. I saw the Pitbull fans all week in Vegas. I saw Rolly in the hotel lobby no less than 10 times, Chris. I'm talking like running around with his shirt undone, taking pictures with fans the night before the fight. Our guy Mitch, our producer for the weekend, not a big boxing fan, but he's like, hey, it's kind of weird that Rolly's out Saturday night at midnight in the lobby. Like, what's up with that? But in the ring, he gets taken out by Pitbull. He gets rocked in the first round. Didn't even have a single moment in the fight, Rolly. It was all Pitbull in his debut at 140 pounds. He picks up the WBA title, steamrolled him. Pitbull did what Pitbull does. He puts his head down. He takes big shots. He comes forward, does not throw jabs. 121 of Pitbull's 129 landed punches were power shots. Isaac Pitbull Cruz is the new WBO 140-pound champion, and now he can take on some huge names in that division.
Yeah, this week we did a breakdown, Paulie Malignaggi and I on ProBox TV about this fight, and as I'm doing my studying, my tape work, I'm like, man, Pitbull's going to kick this kid's ass. He's just way too open for the left hook. He's just way too there. The only question I had in my mind was, can Pitbull take the power of Rolly? Because Rolly can punch. And he hits you with punches you don't see because he's very awkward and it's really hard to get a beat on him. But guys like that, if you're able to bull rush him and get through the power, he literally has nothing. And he did. He showed that. Exactly. I'm happy for Pitbull. He seems like a good guy. I mean, he's a workman. Like you said, I don't want my champion to be the guy who's hanging out in the lobby the night before the fight. I want my champion who's locked in his room like a savage pit bull in a cage, eat raw meat. I want that guy to be my champion. So yeah, the right guy won the fight, and again, I'm not surprised. I was at ends with a couple people. You, Paulie, you guys were picking Rolly. I was like, I think Pitbull's.
I don't know. I don't know why I picked Rolly. I was leaning Rolly for some reason, and then the day before the fight, when I did my little thing with Lampley, I went back to Pitbull. And yeah. I guess it was because of Pitbull's last performance. I guess it was because of him being at 140 for the first time. I guess it was because of how he fights walking in. I thought maybe Rolly would be able to catch him.
But
or
also
something.
Pitbull's
maybe?
Last fight. Pitbull's last fight was...
Yes, really more than anything was his last fight is with what really was sticking with me, him not looking good. I'll tell you this, though. This dude has a fan base, man. They were a ton of fans for him in Las Vegas. That arena was so loud for him last night or Saturday night when he came into the ring and then when he won that fight. A huge celebration for Pitbull Cruz. Did the damn thing. Rolly, it's just like, man, that guy just looks like he was just out of it. He didn't have a plan A, didn't have a plan B. I give him credit for withstanding that early onslaught and getting his legs back a little bit, but he didn't really have much of note. He landed a few shots here and there, but the story of this fight is all about Pitbull Cruz now. 140-pound champion. You know, he could take on all the champs at 140. You're looking at Devin Haney. You're looking at Matias. You're looking at Teofimo Lopez. Ismael Barroso versus Pitbull would be a fun fight. And you're also looking at a rematch with Gervonta Davis. Mm-hmm. Gervonta Davis now has a path to becoming a champion at 140 pounds. It's never been a big thing for Gervonta Davis to win titles. Obviously, if you've been following boxing, you know that Tank Davis doesn't really care about picking up these conventional titles. But if they can do a rematch between Tank and Pitbull, which Pitbull has been asking for the last 2 years, and you have a 140-pound title thrown on top of it for marketing standpoint, Gervonta can beat Pitbull and then be a champion at 140 pounds, and suddenly unification bout with Haney, suddenly unification bout with Teofimo, and then you head into this second part of Gervonta Davis's career where he's closing in on 30, where he has to fight these big names at 140. I mean, there's a little bit of a path here, but I don't want to get too far ahead of it with Gervonta, but Pitbull just changed everything, and he changed 140 pounds. And one last thing I'll throw out to you, Chris. Rolly should have fought Ryan Garcia. What was he thinking, not fighting Ryan Garcia? He thought he was pulling a fast one by taking on Pitbull in the co-main event of this PBC card. Could have fought Ryan Garcia, made a ton of more money, maybe could have even won.
I don't think anyone
is going to misrepresent Rolly as being a really smart guy. So I'm not that surprised that, you know, this went the way it went. He doesn't fight smart. He doesn't act smart. He doesn't talk smart. He doesn't move business-wise smart. So it's not surprising to me at all. But we have two weight classes now, 154 and potentially 140, who have been flipped on their head because of the work done by Sebastian Fandora and Isaac Pitbull Cruz. Like, we got titles changing hands. We got landscapes changing dramatically. We got fights that are coming to a potential fruition that we would never even have thought of. Things got very interesting last night.
What do you think about Pitbull potentially fighting Gervonta at 140, which would be a PBC fight, which would be really easy to make, could happen at the end of this year if Gervonta could get past Frank Martin at lightweight? What do you think of Tank going up to 140 and fighting Pitbull in a rematch, which suddenly has legs now, which didn't, like, last week?
I think that's the only path for Tank to actually move up to 140. I don't think he wants to fight any of the top guys at 140. He's giving up so much in size and weight, but to Pitbull, he's not. But the problem is, he goes up and he beats Pitbull and gets 145-pound title. He's got to fight those other guys now. So, and you said, he's not a guy who chases titles. I don't think that fight's going to happen.
What fight?
Gervonta and Isaac.
Why not? I mean, who else would Tank fight then?
He's going to stay at 35. He doesn't want to fight at 40.
And then fight Shakur?
He doesn't want to fight at 40. He's too small for
that. Yeah, I think he walks around. There's this whole notion out there. He walks around at like 150, 160. He might be getting too big for 135.
No, he's a really small
fighter. So you're saying that Gervonta Davis is just never in I don't want to get into a Gervonta Davis discussion here, but we are. Gervonta Davis is never going to fight one of these names his whole career?
Why would you think he would? He hasn't.
Because how do you fill out your career? How do you go and make them a maximum amount of dollars?
He's made a lot of money, and he's making.
I know that. There's no way he can go the rest of his career fighting the Frank Martins of the world, fighting his last couple opponents, Leo Santa Cruz types, where they could carefully match them and put him in there. He has to fight Devin Haney. He has to fight Shakur Stevenson. That's how they were moving his career along. Like, they're using this Floyd Mayweather.
They're going to do that when they're going to cash him out. They're going to wait till he gets to his early 30s and he starts to dip,
that's
and then he's going to cash out. He's
not.
His prime's closing. He's not 25 anymore. His prime is closing. And
what is he, 28? I think he's right in it.
Yeah. But he's getting to. But a guy who lives the lifestyle that those guys live, running around, being crazy, you know, like hanging out in clubs and stuff. That hanging around the Broners of the world.
I don't know if he does that. I feel like he dabbles, but I feel like he's a lot more committed than many will give him. But I just can't see him not fighting some of those big names. And if with this Pitbull win, there's an opening for him to go to 140. I'm not saying it's going to happen.
That's what I said. I think that's the only viable fight, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Let's just say it does happen. Let's say he beats Frank Martin, and then Pitbull waits and finally gets his fight with Gervonta at 140 at the end of the year. Gervonta wins. He's the 140-pound champion. And then you got Haney out there, who I saw this weekend, which said that he wants to fight Tank. Teofimo Tank at 140 would be freaking legendary. Maybe Shakur goes up to 140 and leaves Top Rank because his last fight is going to be on July 6th with Top Rank. There's a lot going on at 140. I just think Gervonta could get into that mix and finally do what everyone has been asking him to do. And I think what Mayweather Promotions, LRB, or whoever's running Tank's career at this point, has probably thought the plan was all along. Wait till he's 29, 28, 29, get those big fights, build up a nice star power, build up being the A side, and then fight these
guys
at 140.
There we go, Dan. Dan's got his Hollywood writer hat on again. Very optimistic, Dan. You're very, very optimistic.
But that's just like a plan. That's not like a crazy plan. That's just like what you do with a fighter like Tank.
You said two things about boxing, right?
Yeah.
It's not logical.
Yeah.
And it's not fair.
Right.
So, but I'm telling you, we're not seeing any of that.
I know that, but you just think that what they were doing with Tank, if they had a plan in place, which LOB will tell you and everyone will tell you on Tank's side, they've done a really good job up to this point of building him into the bona fide A-side star that's knocking everyone out. So if he does fight a Haney, if he does fight a Tio, if he does fight a Shakur, he is driving the bus when it comes to negotiations. He is the A side. So therefore, make those fights, make the lion's share of the money, potentially win them. Like, I would favor him in a lot of these fights because of his punching power. This is what happens with Gervonta Davis. You get into these discussions where it just hijacks the debate, hijacks a show. But it does tie in to Pitbull Cruz and his win over Rolly Romero. For Rolly, Ryan Garcia says, get it to influencer fighting. Like, you would be great on Misfits. Will we ever see Rolly on the top level again?
No, he shouldn't have given him the first place. He was the most undeserving world champion I think I've ever seen in my lifetime. First of all, he didn't win that Barocha fight. He was on his way to lose that fight. Barocha was going to be a world champion finally. I mean, I can't really say that, but listen, if that's the way you win your title, he won a vacant title against a 40-year-old guy who was kicking his ass and got a gift stoppage. So, yeah. And then he looked horrible last night when he fought Isak Cruz.
He looked really
nothing.
Bad.
He had nothing for that guy. Was getting flopped in that all over the place. No, we'll never see him again at a high level. Could be a money grab. Him and Ryan could fight. I could see that. So he'll make money. But yeah, no, I don't think he's gonna get anywhere near a title any ever again. Honestly,
yeah. I don't think so either. Yeah, maybe a Ryan fight. Like, damn, that would just be like something for us to have a good laugh at.
Which is a step up from a YouTube fight, basically.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see on April 20th what happens with Ryan Garcia. I was with Devin Haney this weekend, and he says everything's looking systems go. Everything he hears is that Ryan's training, and the fight's definitely going to happen. If it's going to be competitive is another story. But I was really impressed with Haney being around him at the top-ranked gym, just like his maturity, his personality. You know, just we had a really good clip that just hit a million views on TikTok where he blind-ranked the top guys at 140 pounds just to show off, like, his personality. And I think the predominant comments on that video were like, oh, man, like, this guy's really starting to win me over, Devin Haney. Like, I'm seeing a side of him, like he's got personality. He's obviously he's looking great in comparison to Ryan Garcia. But the overwhelming thing I got from that video and all the things is like this kid like has his head on straight, and I actually like enjoy Devin Haney.
He's very likable in person. I think a lot of the antics and a lot of this. Listen, you only see us a lot of times at press conferences, and we're face to face with a guy that we're gonna have to punch in the face, and people we really don't like. So you get a kind of a skewed vision of a fighter. But in person, I met Devin. I think Devin was like 11 or 12 in Las Vegas when he was, you know, bright-eyed and just in love with boxing and being in gyms. Yeah. And I've known Bill for a long time. Like, they're great people, so I'm not surprised by it, but I'm happy that the fans are actually get to see the real Devin Haney. He's a very likable guy, and he's mature, obviously, from the way that he trains and how he presents himself. So, it's just stark contrast to Ryan.
Let's go through the rest of the card really quick. Arizandi Lara with a left hook from the gods. Old man Lara still got it.
Fighting off all the time.
Dangerous early, and he knocks out Michael Zarafa. Danny Swift Garcia was in the crowd. They had him on the broadcast. That's the fight that they were trying to make. I would not be surprised if that's next. It's not a fight that fans have a ton of interest in, but Lara looked pretty good, man. The thing about Lara, if he has an opponent in there that he's far superior to, this is lately. He'll get him out of there, and you got to respect that.
Yeah. Now he understands that we don't get paid for overtime, and like you said, if Lara's better than you, he's getting you out of there. And it reminds me of my wrestling coach. He's like, that guy doesn't belong on the mat with you. Finish the match, and that's kind of how Lara approaches.
Huntington High, Chris in his singlet.
Oh, so that was St. Anthony's, man. St. Anthony's. I was a proud Friar.
That's right. Right. You didn't go to Huntington. For our Long Island listeners out there, you'll understand this. Everyone else will have no idea. Let's go down the list. That Martinez fight was fun, back and forth stuff. But what really caught my eye was...
A little underwhelmed by Martinez's performance. I thought that I've seen Cordova on our air on Pro Box, and he did not impress me. And Martinez generally does impress me. I was a little underwhelmed with that one.
Yeah, Martinez was doing Martinez things. It took him a little bit to wake up, fights unorthodox, at times looks like a killer, and then all of a sudden it's the 12th round and he's still in the fight. What other fights were on this card? Oh, yeah, the Carmel Moton. I don't know if you caught this. First fight of the night.
I did.
Kid's 17 years old. I've obviously been hearing a lot about him because he's a Floyd Mayweather protege. He was being trotted out in Vegas, and he was supposed to fight on the walkout bout, which he's been doing for the... mostly long part of his young career. But Elijah Garcia gets sick, so they put Carmel Moton in the first fight on Amazon in there with Cuba. And you would think this would be a walkover because this is how they match 17-year-olds. But this fight was amazing. Back and forth stuff. Eight rounds at 17 years old for Carmelo Motan. I'm like, dude, this guy can, like, in 2 years, he should be fighting for titles. Like, we're looking at, could we have a teenager being a world champion?
Yeah, I mean, he showed a lot in that fight. He got hit with some big shots. He took them well. He was fighting through the adversity. He had a tough guy in front of him. Yeah, early on in career, with guys like this, you normally don't see those kinds of matchups and those kinds of fights. But listen, they believe in the kid's skills, and he showed a lot. He showed a lot.
Yeah. And Boachuk Mendoza fight wasn't like the banger that I thought it was going to be. Like, Boachuk looked fine. I thought he looked fine, and I thought he came out and handled himself. And Mendoza just, it's just Mendoza. He's just really brave. And how much can you say, oh, this guy's got a great chin? And he's just taking a beating fight after fight. Like, after a while, it's like, okay, I really don't want to see that anymore because it's just not great. But Boachuk wins, and I thought he looked okay. I didn't think he looked great. I didn't think he looked bad. But he is now in line for a title shot, WBC.
Yeah, I'm not really impressed with Boachuk. I actually thought he was a different kind of fighter than he is. Just a super heavy-handed guy. He's slow as molasses. Good God. Super, super slow. Slow feet, slow hands. Heavy, heavy hands. I mean, you can see and feel the power. But Mendoza is a really, really tough guy. But also, I felt bad for Mendoza because you could tell he took the fight on 10 days' notice.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, he was fit. He looked strong. He's one of those guys. But he didn't have the same explosiveness and crispness that he has when he fought Tim Zhu. Tim Zhu, he was explosive. He was dangerous. He didn't have that. He didn't have that you know, that extra that oomph. Mm-hmm. And you needed that against a guy like Boachuk. I think a prime in-shape Mendoza has a good chance to beat Boachuk because of the speed and his ability to set traps. He's learned that with Salas. He was never that kind of guy. He was always like a fitness guy, pressure guy, strong guy. But with Salas actually taught him how to set traps and set things up, which he did against Zhu. He did that against Fedora, which, you know, obviously got him. And he was actually doing it last night against Boachuk. He just wasn't explosive enough because I don't think he had the fitness level that was proper for a 12-round fight. Taking a 12-round fight on 10 days' notice is wild.
Well, he was training alongside Zhu the whole training
camp. Yeah, but Dan, as a fighter, I'm telling you right now, training alongside somebody, being a sparring partner, and training for a championship fight, totally different worlds.
That's true. I wouldn't know. I'll take your word for it. But, like, it's just like you think you're going to get called, but there's got to be some doubt in your mind. Like, yeah, I'm probably not going to get the call. Mm-hmm. Then you get the call, and then all of a sudden you're in there on Amazon Prime, which I thought, let's look at Amazon Prime. Like, I thought – it looked cool. Like, it looked – I was watching the fights on Amazon Prime, the undercard, before I switched over to PPV.com. It was clear. It was I got a big alert from Amazon Prime on my phone, like, tune into the fights. They're starting now, which is crazy. Cool. The Prime era has begun. It's very much looked like a PBC type of show. You had Custer in the open. You had Mora Ranallo. You had Abner Maris. You had Joe Goosen, who you've seen on Fox. You had Claudia Trejos, our friend,
nice,
who's usually the zone person, and she's awesome. Jordan Plant was also involved in it too, and you've seen her on PBC types of shows. I thought it was pretty good. I thought the broadcast was fine. We'll see what's next because the next couple of fights are huge when it comes to Amazon and having Canelo and having Tank Davis and moving forward with the whole thing. But overall, the Prime era has begun, and I think we're going to see where it goes over the next couple months.
Tim Bradley, I think, was really smart. He said that this was going to be a soft opening for Amazon Prime, and I truly believe that. And especially, once he said it, I was like, you know what? It could definitely be that way, and it certainly seemed that way. There was no major stars. We're getting ready for Canelo. I think they had to work out their kinks. There were definitely kinks in the show. You know, they showed Ugas, and they said it was four-time world champion Zab Judah, which was embarrassing.
Not great.
And not embarrassing for Zab or for Ugas, either, man. It's embarrassing for the production. There's definitely some kinks, some things to work through. But, you know, you got Canelo next, so it's got to be a tight ship once Canelo's fighting.
Yeah.
Tim said was very, very smart. Soft opening.
Yeah, and that Canelo fight is also going to be available on DAZN, but they're taking the PBC broadcast. So DAZN is just simply taking the broadcast for PBC. So that's going to be another PBC production with Canelo and Munguia. Ryan Haney will be a DAZN production. So that's what we got there if everyone's into the production heads out there. How about Valdez? We'll end with the show with this. Friday night main event, Oscar Valdez gets back into the win column. He is now the interim WBC champion at 130 pounds. I always root for Oscar Valdez. I think he's a fan favorite. Got a great style. Nine lives, you name it. I thought he was done. Liam Wilson decided to fight Valdez's type of fight, you know, stand and trade, which ended up being a problem. Valdez lands a nice shot, knocks out the Australian, and the Australians had a tough weekend. Had a tough weekend between Liam Wilson, Zhu, and Zarafa, all stopped or lost. But Valdez wins, and now he is a player at 130 pounds at the twilight of his career. To talk about Luis Alberto Lopez, who could move up to 130, bring me that fight. That's a fun one.
Yeah, that's one that I think that needs to happen. But just to touch on Valdez, I love Valdez, man. He fights with his heart on his sleeve. Talk about blood and guts warrior. He just fights all heart. Liam Wilson, he's good, man. He hits hard. He is big for the weight class. He came out in that first round. I was like, wow, this is going to have his hands full tonight. He might lose. Like you said, he chose to fight in front of Valdez a little too much, end up getting clipped and stopped. But I think Liam Wilson's really good, man. He's got a very deceiving record. But Valdez, all heart, pulled it out. Nine lives, like you said. But that Luis Alberto Lopez, I like that fight. Interesting matchup in terms of their styles and the way they match up. Lopez, super athletic, fights like a soccer player, the way he jumps in and out and slides and switches sides. Just super, super athletic. And Valdez is funny to me, man, it's stylistically, because he has that deep amateur background, and you see the fundamentals, but also he just throws the most winging shots.
Yeah.
And just like spin, turns his head and loops his shots, times them really well. Very, very precise looping punch thrower. Obviously, again, that huge amateur background is, and the ability is there. But, man, he just wants to fucking swing with both hands.
it's amazing. I mean, it's fan – that's what I said. It's fan-friendly. He's always been fan-friendly, and it's been his downfall in his career. And then he kind of got with Reynoso and kind of changed up his style and became a little bit more of a boxer. But at times you'll see him bust out that brawler style, which is obviously his instinct because he's a Mexican and he's a warrior. But he's figured out that boxer-puncher style. I don't know if he'll ever get back to the top, but maybe he can win another world title. Or at least just, give us fans something to watch and be entertained for another night against a Luis Lopez, which would be a really tough fight. That's really it. We're going to have a lot more for you later in the week. We'll break down Teofimo's new opponent. We'll break down Shakur Stevenson's new opponent. We'll preview the weekend. Just wanted to get on here and talk about a crazy weekend of fights where a lot of things got flipped up on its head. But that's boxing, right, Chris? Just there's things not going smooth. There's no script in boxing. It's
no,
rip
setting
up the
up
script.
A show was not smooth either.
No, we had some technical difficulties, guys. Thank you for bearing with us.
But we're here on Easter Sunday making it happen because too much happened last night. We Inside Boxing Live, we got your back, boxing fans.
That's right.
Don't you worry.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.